Welcome to Big Fat Positive with Shauna and Laura. This week, we have our weekly check-ins. We have our special segment, Today I Learned, where we learn all about queens, kangaroos, and vaginas. And we close with our BFPs and BFNs for the week. Let's get to it. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is episode 102. Hello, Shauna.
Hi.
You want to tell us how old your toddler is and how you're doing this week?
Oh, yes. So Cece is 17 months in 1 week. And this has been a pretty uneventful week, which is good. I welcome the unevents of life. So I just have like a few like cute little new things she's doing to report. So the first thing is she's getting pretty assertive, but in a cute way. Like she has taken to like walking up to me or Steve, grabbing our finger and like leading us to wherever she wants to go. Usually to the kitchen, to the snack cabinet, right? Or whatever, to a book. And yeah, she just, we like let her take charge and lead the way and show us where she wants to go. So that's really cute.
That is adorable.
And then along the same lines, like some of her assertive behavior, like we were reading a book. You know how a lot of kids baby board books have like fuzzy, I don't know, animal tails and
yeah, they're like touch
tactile.
And feel. Yeah.
Yeah, touch and feel books. We have a lot of those. And I was reading with her one night and she touched the fuzzy tail or whatever, and then I touched it. And then she stopped and she turned and grabbed my pointer finger, pulled it over to the book, and took charge of rubbing my finger all over the fluffy tail.
You have to feel this, Mom.
It's so cute. It's so fun to watch their little personalities and preferences and stuff just start to really come alive as they get older into the toddler years. I love it.
I also love this idea, like they understand you're separate now, you know? It's like, no, you have to feel it too.
Yeah, that I think that is where it comes from. Although what she did after she put my finger on it is she turned and found a button on my shirt. Like there's like a shirt pocket with a little button. Mm-hmm. She grabbed that and then rubbed the fuzzy tail with the button. So,
oh, I see.
She knows we're all separate, I guess.
Yes, the button needs to feel it too.
Yeah, so that's really funny.
Really funny. Oh my gosh, so cute.
And another thing that she's just randomly picked up, I love paying attention to the things that she picks up randomly without us teaching her, is going, which once she started doing it, I realized how often Steve and I do this, right? Anytime it's like you open her clothes drawer, just pick a shirt. It's like, what shirt to pick? Where's that book?
Oh my
God. So she now, anytime there's any type of question uttered or she's looking for something, she goes,
That's so funny.
Yes.
Picking up mannerisms. It's like the Burr thing with Alexa.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And this one, I feel like she understands a little bit better that it's connected to questioning and wondering where something is, which, you know, it's just like, okay, our kids are getting older. Our babies are like understanding what questions are instead of just statements. And
yeah.
So I'm always like, what? You're growing up so fast. Oh my God.
I know. They get so big so fast. Like I keep seeing my guy in like a t-shirt and I'm just like, you're a little boy.
Oh my gosh. But I just love him so much. So this last one, gosh, I have such a short check-in this week, which is probably refreshing. So the other thing she's picked up from reading books and stuff is, so there's one book I was reading her where the little character like kept going to sleep and then waking up or whatever. So every time the little bear would go to sleep, I'd go, and then he'd wake up, hi, and she would laugh. And then after a minute, she just like started mimicking the snoring. And I was like, oh my God, can you make that sound? It's like, you know, it's just but coming from a tiny person. And now she understands. So if like she sees a baby, picture of a baby sleeping or something, she goes,
do you have it on snoring video?
Yes. Okay. Let me read this. Okay. Baby. Look at that baby sleeping.
Hey.
Can you do your snore? The baby's sleeping.
so cute.
And then sneezing too. So like the other day, grandma sneezed and Cece just goes, achoo. And I was just like, what? They just pick up on stuff,
They're little sponges. Everyone tells you that. Oh, they pick up on everything. But once they start repeating things back, you're just like, oh, shit, they really do. You got to like, I mean, I don't believe in like censoring myself in front of him, but you just have to know they are hearing everything. And the things they repeat back are not what you expect. That's the thing. It's like a sneeze, you know, like there's no reason for her to repeat that back except for she's tickled by it, right? She thinks it's kind of funny and cute.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say, is that to me it's like a little window into what she finds delightful or interesting. So the things that she's pointing out or saying or picking up on by herself are her interests, you know. It's right now it's sneezing and snoring, but that's really adorable.
Maybe she'll be a Foley artist when she grows up. Making sound effects.
Maybe. I think Elle is on her way to being a voiceover artist with all the cartoons she watches and like making voices and stuff. So the two of them together will just be perfect in their little sound booths making voices and sound effects.
You have the mics.
Yep. Got it. So that's pretty much it for us. Just a few cute little things that I'm finding delightful this week. What about you? How are you guys? And how old's your bebe? Toddler.
I love a happy check-in. We're good. We are also having a happy check-in this week. He's 16 months and 1 week. And we're kind of having a similar thing going on with the repeating stuff. So I had talked about how he will say turtle hot when he points to like the splash pad outside. Well, one of the new things he's done is he's really into our pepper grinder. And he started, you know, like a week or two ago going like Peppa, Peppa when he pointed to it. And he would want it. Like he would want to grab it. And I'd be like, I don't think you're going to want it. You know, this, the pepper is going to make you sneeze. And he would insist. So I ground a little bit of pepper for him. And, you know, he tried to eat it and he didn't like it. And I said, yeah, it's going to make you sneeze. So now he sees the pepper and he goes, Peppa nose. Peppa nose.
Wow.
Like, oh, my God. Oh, wow. I think, you know what? I think I have it on audio. Do you want to hear it?
Yeah, yeah.
Love bug, what's this?
Pepper.
Pepper. Yeah, no. What does pepper do? What happens with pepper?
Nose.
Yeah, nose. Pepper nose. Pepper.
Oh, that's so cute.
I know. I think it's so cute. And then he also like kind of sneezes like Peppa knows. So anyway, I'm really enjoying that stuff too. I think it's just, I love the communication.
Yeah.
So the other check-in for this week is that we've been experiencing like the typical toddler mealtime, you know, I know it's not a problem. It's like the toddler mealtimes, which is like sometimes they want to eat, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they, you know, most of the time they don't want to eat vegetables. Basically all they want is pasta or whatever. Maybe your toddler's different. My guy, if it's cheese, if it's pasta, he's cool. If it's berries, oh my God, berries, forget it. He'll eat his weight in berries. But, you know, we've had problems, or I don't want to call it a problem. We've had, you know, difficulties getting him to eat and much else for a while than like, you know, simple carbs and fruit and cheese. So we've been kind of following this idea. It's Ellen Satter idea of the division of responsibility. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, but refresh my memory. I might need to use this too.
Well, the basic thing is like parents are responsible for like preparing and offering the food, and children are responsible for like how much and whether they eat. So the so the parents are responsible for the when and the what. And the kids are responsible for the how much and whether, right? So we've been trying to follow this, and it's hard to not like try to encourage him to eat more of anything in particular, because you're like, you're going to go to bed hungry, you know, you don't want him to, you know that they like, you know that they usually eat more. So would you just like another stick of cheese so you don't go to bed hungry, that sort of thing.
Right.
But we've been trying to stick to it, and then also just like really, really trying very hard not to comment on how much he eats and or give him any kind of like positive feedback about eating more. Right. Like, just if he's done, he's done. That's fine. Takes a lot of like restraint. Right.
A lot.
A lot of restraint. But this week is the first week I've really felt like it's working.
Oh, cool.
Like, I'm seeing the progress. And mm-hmm. what happened was that this week, he's suddenly just eating more of what we offer mm-hmm. him. You know, we've been offering, we put like a veggie, a meat, and, you know, a cheese or bread or whatever on the plate. And knowing that, like, there's always going to be one thing on the plate that he knows and is familiar with and likes.
Right.
And then we would put the other stuff down, and usually he'd just plain out ignore it. And it felt so futile, like a waste mm-hmm. of food, you know? I'd end up eating, like, little pieces of beef, you know, like, yeah. at the end of the dinner. But this week, he ate mushrooms.
Wow.
Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Squash. And beef.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I have to say that in addition to it not being very easy to, like, not comment when he doesn't eat, it's really hard to not comment when he does eat.
Uh-huh.
Like, Corey and I were just kind of, like, stealing side glances when he started eating the beef. Like, just don't say it.
Yes. Like, you know?
But I'm encouraged by that. So good. I just wanted to share, because I know there's a lot of people who struggle with toddler meals, and it seems like counterintuitive to not force them to eat and to not, like, try to encourage them to eat. But I am now seeing that it's paying off. So, mm-hmm. you know, I am here to say that it's possible.
Yeah, that's so great. We definitely need to review that in our household. For me, not so much with Cece. I feel like it's easier for me to let her do her thing, because I've noticed mm-hmm. how her appetite goes and comes and goes. And, well, she does eat vegetables, at least right now. But it's harder as they get a little bit older, right? Like, Elle mm-hmm. is, you know, can be very picky. It's like, I don't want to eat. Or she'll just leave the table and be like, I'm done. And I just, you know, we sometimes can't help ourselves but be like, do you just eat more? Oh, you haven't eaten much today, blah, blah, blah. And I hate that it gets commented on. I don't want to mm-hmm. micromanage her eating. I don't think it's going to pay off in the long run. And I think she's fine. You know, like mm-hmm. she'll figure it out herself, really, as long as we offer the good things, like
yeah. this,
like Ellen Satter says. So I'm going to refresh that and share that info with Steve. So thank you for bringing that up.
The other thing I learned recently from my mommy and me class, or my toddler and me class, is that with babies, we're so programmed to think about calories in a 24-hour period, right? Like, oh, the newborns have to get X amount of calories or X amount of feeds yeah. every 24 hours, right? With toddlers, apparently it's calories per week.
Oh, interesting.
Which blew my mind, because, you know, toddlers, one day they eat a ton and you're just like, whoa, you're hungry today. Uh-huh. And the next day they're like not eating anything. And uh-huh. you're wondering what's going on. And now that I've reframed it, it's like, it's the nutrition in a whole week. Right. It's definitely, like, chilled me out a little bit more, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, there's more leeway there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I just want to share our food wins this week.
Yay, I love it.
You know, I can share it to you and then pretend like everything is normal and fine around here.
Exactly. That's great. Well, should we take a break and move on to our special segment, Today I Learned?
I think we should.
Okay. Laura, we recently had our moms on the show, and it was so fun hearing their stories from the past.
I loved hearing what they had to share about their experiences being pregnant and having young kids, but you know they have so many more amazing memories and stories to share.
Yes, and that's why StoryWorth is such a wonderful gift for the mother figure in your life. It's a way to capture those stories and memories for years to come.
And what better time to give StoryWorth than for Mother's Day, which is right around the corner. Right now, our listeners can save $10 off your first purchase by going to StoryWorth.com/BFP.
Here's how it works. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, such as, what is your favorite memory of your parents?
All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter.
You'll be emailed a copy of your loved one's response as they're submitted over the course of the year. You'll get to enjoy their retelling of the stories you already know, or be surprised by stories you've never heard before.
After that year of fun, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come.
I gifted StoryWorth to my mom a couple years ago, and her hardcover book is a special memento on my bookshelf that my girls and I love to look through.
My mom did one too and included lots of pictures from her childhood, which Sebastian and Augie love looking at.
Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to StoryWorth.com/BFP.
That's StoryWorth.com/BFP to save $10 on your first purchase. There's nothing like the feeling of being confident in your own skin. No complicated routine, no multiple step protocols, just simple, scientifically validated solutions.
Absolutely. That's why we have to tell you about today's sponsor, OneSkin. Their products make it easy to keep your skin healthy while looking and feeling your best.
The secret to OneSkin's success is their proprietary OS1 peptide, which switches off the aging cells and has been clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier and improve skin health markers.
For a limited time, our listeners will get an exclusive 15% off OneSkin products using the code BFP when you check out at OneSkin.co.
One of my favorite things about OneSkin products is how easy they are to use. I swear, I've seen skin routines with like 20 steps, but not OneSkin. Just cleanse, pat your skin dry, and apply twice daily.
We aren't the only ones who love OneSkin. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews, and were recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands in 2024.
OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer.
My skin tends to get really irritated this time of year, but since using the OneSkin face supplement every day, my skin feels calm and healthy. I've also been using the eye topical supplement, which I really feel brightens up my face.
Get started today with 15% off using code BFP at oneskin.co.
That's 15% off oneskin.co with code BFP. After your purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you.
Okay, I will be the first to admit that I don't always prioritize my own wellness. With kids and work, it never feels easy to fit in taking care of myself. But with Allo Moves, I find it easier than ever to do so.
Same. With the Allo Moves app, everything I need is in one place. Yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, mindfulness, and so much more.
If you're curious what Allo Moves has to offer, visit allomoves.com and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and 20% off an annual membership.
I love that I can easily find a class that's perfectly suited to my interests and ability level. They offer classes from beginner to advanced, and all classes are on demand, so you can fit them into your busy schedule.
They have high-intensity classes if you're looking to get in a good sweat, and low-key mindfulness classes if you're looking to get centered. They even offer help with sleep, which we all know is crucial for moms.
Ever since I watched The Art of Sleep on Allo Moves, I've been falling asleep faster and staying asleep longer.
One thing I really like about Allo Moves is that they create themed playlists, so it's easy to find content on the areas you're interested in. One of my favorite playlists right now is called Meditation for Productivity.
Ooh, I love the sound of that one. Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves. Go to allomoves.com now and use code BFP for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code BFP. allomoves.com, code BFP.
We're back, and we have one of my favorite special segments, Today I Learned, where we talk about things about parenting, pregnancy, children, etc., that we have learned recently and want to share with you. Laura, you are up first. What have you learned recently?
Okay, so I have learned something about tantrums, which is a very pressing concern, I think, when you have a toddler. You
know,
this is when
tantrums
start coming. And I learned about the concept of the upstairs and downstairs brain. Do you know about this?
Okay. No. Mm-mm.
So I learned about this in my toddler and me class from my teacher, Gia, and she was talking about how there are basically two types of tantrums. There's the tantrums with your upstairs brain and the tantrums with your downstairs brain. And obviously, I need to explain this. So okay, so this is something that a neuroscientist named Dan Siegel and a parenting expert named Tina Bryson came up with, this concept of the downstairs and upstairs aspects of our brain. So they call like the primitive parts of our brain, the limbic system and the amygdala, that are like are all about like emotions, right? And impulses and short-term interests, like those primitive drives that, you know, drive your life, right? Like, mm-hmm. I need to eat. I need to sleep. I need to stay alive. That's your downstairs brain, right? It's like childlike and impulsive and instinctual. The upstairs brain are like the outer cortices of our brain, the ones that help us learn to inhibit our impulses, gain perspective, that sort of thing, right? The analytical part of our brain.
Like the ego and the id.
Yeah, I think so. Although I think it is a little bit, you know, they frame it a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like maybe it's been a while since psychology that, you know, the id, I feel like the id kind of has a negative connotation in a way. And so does the ego. I feel like both ego and id, you kind of feel like there's some judgment there. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. But it's more about describing how different parts of our brain just are controlling different things that we need, right? We need to be analytical, but we also need to like breathe and get our food, right? And so what Dan Siegel and Tina Bryson did was talk about them like in relation to tantrums. Uh-huh. And when you're a toddler, right, you don't necessarily like have all the like analytical functions already, you know, formed. I think well into your 20s, you don't have that like frontal cortex going, right? And when you're dealing with tantrums, you can try to identify which type of tantrum you're seeing and respond differently accordingly. Mm-hmm. So I found an article that was talking about the same research on the website is Positive Parenting Solutions. So Daniel Siegel and Tina Payne Bryson, they actually wrote a book called The Whole Brain Child. And that's, I've heard of it.
That book. Haven't read it, obviously. Haven't read it.
Now I want to read it.
Yeah.
But they say, you know, the downstairs portion of their brain is developed first. Just like the downstairs, upstairs thing is like how you'd build a house. You can't build the upstairs before you build the downstairs, right?
Okay, I like that analogy.
Yeah, so emotion, it's developed first. And then the upstairs is like the higher thinking and impulse control. That takes a lot longer to construct. But you can determine which type of tantrum your kid's having, right? By how they're reacting. So like the basic difference is like a downstairs or like lower brain tantrum is like a meltdown tantrum. There's no amount of logic. There's no amount of distraction that is going to get them out of that tantrum. They're basically completely like they're all of their frontal cortex is like shut down at this point. And that's really interesting to think about because I think a lot of people, you know, you hear this from people giving advice all the time. It's like, oh, they're having a tantrum. Just distract them with some food or take them outside or whatever. And that can work if they're having an upstairs tantrum. If their tantrum is more about exerting control and something analytical, right? But if they're having a downstairs tantrum, they can't access that part of their brain that allows them to be distracted. So all you can really do is like make sure they're safe and sit with them and let the emotion like go through them.
Yeah.
So I'm not an expert on this. I need to read this book, but I really like the idea of understanding that there's sort of like two types because I do think you get a lot of mom judgment. Thankfully, we haven't had a full on meltdown tantrum yet. I think it tends to start trickling in around 18 months, I think, more, right? But we are, you know, we've had our little moments and, you know, they're definitely not logical, you know?
No, they usually aren't.
But for us, you know, I like the idea of knowing that you're not there to try to fix it. You're not there to try to distract it. You're trying to like get through it. And that even if you were trying, like sometimes it just doesn't work. And that's because they're upstairs brain is shut down. So
totally.
Yeah.
So what's an example of an upstairs tantrum? Like what would the child be tantruming about if it's an upstairs?
Okay. So this Positive Parenting Solutions has this example. So the example that they give, they actually have two examples that are very similar, both about a kid wanting to ride a pony and not being able to, right? Okay. And the first one is they basically describe the exact same thing, but, you know, the mom says, I don't have any money to, you know, pay the pony ride. And the kid has a downstairs tantrum where it says, when you tell the kid, sorry, there's nothing I can do, Suddenly, big tears begin to roll down his cheeks as heavy sobs rise up from his chest. He falls to the floor and slams his little fist on the tile. You start to notice people staring. He doesn't. You try to pull him into a hug, but his body goes limp. So, like, the more you try to stop the tantrum, nothing works, blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
The other one is same exact scenario, but instead of this crying, falling to the floor thing, you say, I'm sorry, honey, I don't have any money. You can't ride today. Suddenly, your sweet, well-behaved boy is nowhere to be seen. But I want to ride it, he yells. You start to notice people staring, and so does he. This only further ignites his need to make a scene. He rushes over to the horse, hops on, wrapping his arms tightly around the neck. I won't leave until I have a ride. So the idea, I think, is that the one of the key things that he notices other people staring, he knows that by the peer pressure, basically, the social pressure, he can, like, convince you to do something, right?
Uh-huh. It sounds like it's more manipulative.
Yes. Well, that's actually exactly what they call it on this blog post, is that it's a manipulative tantrum.
Uh-huh. And I mean,
it's a little hard. You know, kids are, like, obviously not, you know, I think it can be a little mean to call things like that manipulative, because it's not like the child is like. Yeah.
It is. I have a 4-year-old. It is. I mean, they don't know they're really doing it. And it's not necessarily coming from a malicious place. But kids are smart a lot younger than we realize and do use manipulation tactics. They just do. I mean,
maybe coercion is a, you know, like.
Yeah. If you feel like manipulation is too negative of a word. you could definitely do that. But I can see the difference, especially in Elle, because, you know, Cece's not having too many, like, tantrums yet, because you said it's a little early for our toddlers. Mm-hmm. But this morning, Elle had a tantrum, and I'm going to explain it to you, and you tell me if it was an upstairs or downstairs tantrum. Okay. It was 11:30, and I had to go in my room to do a telemedicine appointment, and she couldn't be in my room with me because I needed some privacy to do that appointment. And I said, I'm going to my room now. It's time for me to do my meeting. And she, like, was trying to follow me in. I'm like, no. And this is when I'm going to lock my door so I don't have any interruptions. And she, like, just pushed her way through. And I said, I need to do this meeting. And I, like, tried to usher her out. And she went, no! Fell on the floor. I tried to pick her up. She was dead weight. I'm like, Steve, I need help. My meeting was, like, starting on my computer. The doctor's hearing all of this. And he had to, like, pick her up, and she was slumped in his arms and screaming all the way wherever they ended up going. I don't know.
Well, that's hard. I'm not an expert yet because I haven't read this book. I feel like I need more context because it's the falling on the floor and going completely limp thing makes me think it's a downstairs tantrum, but she knows that she's just, what she wants is to be in the room with you, and she knows how to get that out of you.
Mm-hmm. Like, she's trying to use her big emotions.
So I don't know. What happened afterwards?
You know, I don't know because I haven't checked in with Steve on it yet. Went right into recording. I don't know. I just jumped into my appointment, and she quieted down eventually. So, I don't know. I guess maybe it is hard sometimes to tell what type of tantrum it is. I wonder how he dealt with it. I'll have to see.
And I guess the other question of the context is, like, was she extra tired? Was she hungry? You know, right before lunch. So maybe she was really
right before
hungry.
Lunch.
And if you're really hungry, that tends to mean downstairs tantrum. Right.
Totally.
And the need that needs to be met isn't being in the room with mom. The need is hunger. Right.
That makes so much sense.
But anyway, I'd love to know if our listeners know more about this, because I'm, you know, just scratching the surface. But the concept blew my mind. So I love this idea, and I love being able to frame things this way and knowing that, like, when your amygdala takes over, you're not using logic to get at it. You're using, you know, comfort. Or just time, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, so that was my first Today I Learned. Shauna, what do you have to share with us?
Today I learned about vaginal seeding.
Come again?
Vaginal.
Uh-huh.
As in the vagina.
Yeah, yeah.
Seeding, as in, like, seeds.
Okay.
I
have no idea what this is about. You need
Neither
to help
did
me
I.
Out.
When I saw this term, I was like, need to learn about this right away. What could this possibly have to do with? Would you have any guesses just based on hearing that term?
Vaginal seeding. Oh, goodness. God, I mean, I can go like weird directions. No, just tell me. I don't even want to venture a guess. I don't think it'll be safe. Like, even in our explicit podcast, it will not be safe. So go forth.
I guess for me, it conjures ideas of like sperm being put inside of a woman or something. But anyway, it's not that.
Okay.
It is from Wikipedia. Quote, a procedure whereby vaginal fluids are applied to a newborn child delivered by cesarean section.
Oh, I have heard about this. I had no idea that's what it was called.
I know, right? Vaginal seeding. It's so such a strange term.
But okay, so people do this, why? Because of the microbiome, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, I guess it makes the gut of the baby more similar to that of a baby born vaginally, but it can also potentially lower the baby's risk of asthma, hay fever, food allergies, and perhaps even obesity. So, I don't know.
Those seem like hugely bold claims that I just don't know. I feel like if we got Emily Oster on this, she'd be like, yeah, no.
Yeah, but maybe, I don't know. Yeah, exactly. I guess it's also called microbirthing.
Okay.
And so the purpose is to, quote, recreate the natural transfer of bacteria that the baby gets during a vaginal birth.
Yeah. Which apparently is a thing. Like, it's there's all these studies that C-section babies have different microbiomes than babies that come out through the vagina.
Yes. Yes, but, and so I think people who want this done are trying to recreate the gut biome that happens from a vaginal birth by wiping vagina fluid on the baby's face after it's born. Mm-hmm. So I guess what they do is they, like, 60 minutes before the C-section, take a cotton swab and, like, roll it up like a tampon and stick it in your vagina. And then right after the baby is taken out of your placenta, taken out of your uterus, take out the tampon cotton and swab it on like the eyes and face and stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this?
You know, I guess I could be open to this, except what I'm reading is that most doctors are like, don't do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's there's no like solid evidence that this actually does anything beneficial. And what it could actually do is expose the baby to bacteria that might actually harm it in some way.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I wouldn't do it.
Because this was definitely something I thought about, not the actual act of vaginal seeding. I didn't know about it at the time, but when I knew I was getting a C-section, I was like, oh, man, like the one downside is this supposed difference in the microbiome that you get with kids who are born by a C-section. But then I figured, you know what? There's only so much you can do. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, my breech baby was breech and he was coming out that way one way or another. You know, like, I know there are people who give birth vaginally breech and honestly, more power to those women, but that was not something I even considered. But I think my gut instinct, not being a doctor, not being a scientist, but sort of having read about this, is that it's like a poor substitute for actually going through the birth canal. Like the idea that you can just like gather fluid, because, you know, the baby kind of hangs out in there a little. It's longer than just like a little swab, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. They spend a while in there.
So
interesting. And, you know, I wonder if my babies actually were, well, not CC because it was just a planned C-section, but L actually. I wonder if she was exposed to any of that because my water did break.
Yeah.
I did labor for a long time. You know, I did dilate a little bit. So I wonder if anything, there was any kind of like back and forth of sharing of fluids that maybe CC didn't get. You know, CC's got the eczema problems and stuff like that. Like maybe I should have given her a vagina swab. I don't know.
Well, here's what I'll say about that. can't change what you've done in the past. And yeah. I really doubt her eczema has anything to do with that.
It probably doesn't. And you know, the article's like, it has to be done immediately after birth. So really, there isn't anything I can do about it now. Mm-hmm. And if I tried, I'd probably just be torturing her. So I won't.
I don't think it's recommended to do vaginal seeding on a 17-month-old. But
I don't think so. Oh, my goodness.
Weird.
Yeah. But yeah, if you're a pregnant person looking to learn about vaginal seeding, you know, Google it, because you'll learn a lot more than what we're talking about right now. But it is a thing. So I don't know. Check it out, I guess.
Yeah, I do think that the whole like study of the microbiome is super duper fascinating. Like, I've read that. Oh, but if people don't know what we're talking about, the microbiome is like your personal gut bacteria, actually, or just your whole body's personal bacteria. Like, everyone has unique types of bacteria and combinations, and it's a really interesting field that's just kind of getting started. Mm-hmm. And I read that maybe in the future, like, some scientists believe that just like we have blood types now, that in the future our medical care will be based on what our like biome type is.
Oh, that's cool.
So they might, you know, some people have different profiles, and that means you treat them differently. You know, mm-hmm. they've claimed that, you know, they claim that your biome can affect all kinds of like health issues, you know. But right. And that's why people will do, like, this is even gross, like the fecal transplants.
Oh, know? Yeah. I've heard about that on a podcast, like someone with a lot of intestinal problems. I don't
yeah,
remember.
Like, for example, there's a really bad bacteria called C. diff that yeah. is really, like, really, really bad, can be deadly. It's like an overgrowth of this bad bacteria that, you know, causes all kinds of problems. And people with really, like, persistent cases of that, you know, they get, like, antibiotic resistant, all that stuff, will resort to, like, they call them fecal transplants. Well, you take, like, this is, you skip ahead if this grosses you out, people, where they take, like, stool samples essentially from healthy individuals and transplant it into your own gut. And the idea is that then your body will end up being populated with the good bacteria, and it'll help fight the bad bacteria. But, you know, yeah. And C. diff is often a thing that happens after people take antibiotics. So, you know, all mm-hmm. the good bacteria were killed off with whatever you were taking the antibiotics for, you know, mm-hmm. and then you end up with C. diff. So,
yeah.
You know, it's definitely an interesting field of study, but that ship has sailed for my C-section baby.
Yep, yep. Same with mine.
He seems to be doing okay.
Good. All right. Do you have another one for us?
I do. Shauna, did you know that kangaroos have three vaginas?
Whoa, 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 what?
They have a middle vagina.
What?
And two side vaginas.
And are there openings to all of the vaginas?
So they have I'm looking at a graphic of, you know, what a kangaroo reproductive system looks like.
Uh-huh.
And it, you know what it almost looks like? It almost looks like a tennis racket with like one, like, with like, there's like the common connection for the three vaginas at the bottom. This is the handle. And then you go around the side. Those are the side vaginas. And that's where the sperm travels up. So the sperm travels up the side vaginas, and then down the middle, there's the middle vagina, and that's where the joey travels down.
Oh.
So, like, the sperm goes up the sides, and the baby goes down the center.
Well, is that kind of like fallopian tubes then?
No, because they have two uteruses that are attached to two ovaries, like one ovary each.
Whoa.
With fallopian tubes. So, no, it's like an actual vagina.
That's wild.
Yeah. Kangaroos are weird.
They are so weird. Do they give birth into that pouch, or do they put a baby in the pouch?
I think they give birth and then put the baby in. I might be wrong, though. Should we Google this?
Yeah.
Okay.
And doesn't the dad pouch the baby? Dude, no, I don't know anything about kangaroos.
No, that you're thinking of seahorses.
I am, because Elle and I watched a video of seahorses the other day. That is totally what I'm thinking of.
That's so funny. Okay, here we go. National Geographic has a video on YouTube, on nationalgeographic.com. Let's see here. I'm going to put it on my phone so you can hear it. It's called The World's Weirdest : kangaroo birth.
Wow.
The description is, it's one of nature's weirdest journeys.
Whoa.
A newborn kangaroo, barely bigger than a jelly bean.
What?
Oh my God. Must crawl from one of its mother's two uteri and climb up her body to reach the safety of her pouch. Okay, we're going to watch this.
Whoa.
Oh, I should, here, in the meantime, I'm going to send you this picture of okay, I'm sending you the picture of the kangaroo reproductive system.
Oh.
Right?
What is happening?
I'm actually pretty proud of my description of like a tennis racket. I feel like that's pretty good.
It's kind of like a ping pong paddle with like two semicircles taken out of the paddle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's watch this video. Let's listen to how kangaroos give birth.
A baby roo will call its mother's pouch home for almost a year.
What?
But how it gets there in the first place is a strange and harrowing journey.
Oh.
At 1 month old, the baby roo, barely more than the size of a jelly bean, emerges from one of its mother's two uteri. Once it's outside her body, it grips her fur, and though it still hasn't developed eyes, it instinctively relies on its forelegs to crawl up towards her pouch.
That's crazy.
It's like a little worm.
It takes a few minutes for the tiny roo to reach the pouch. That's it, there. Within minutes, it reaches her pouch and latches on to its mother's teat.
Oh, the teats are in the pouch.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as freaking kangaroos make sense.
That's enough travel to suit the young roo for a long while. Over the next few months, it grows inside the pouch.
Okay, so at the beginning, they're not that cute. I have to, they look like little, I guess, jelly bean-sized little naked rats.
Yeah.
But by the time they get out of the pouch, they're pretty darn cute.
So. Aw.
Last time I went to the zoo, there was a little Joey inside the kangaroo pouch. I saw his little head stick out, and I was just like, you're so cute.
That's so cute. I have to say, I think it'd be pretty cool to give birth to something the size of a jelly bean and then continue growing it on an external pouch.
Mm-hmm.
Then you never have to push out something big. Your body doesn't all have to get all stretched and squished from the inside.
No surgery.
No surgery. Like, kangaroos kind of have it made.
They do. They got it made in the shade. Plus, they have three vaginas. I think we're forgetting the most important part.
Yes.
Anyway, shall we take a break and think about our amazing friends, the kangaroos, and then come back with one more Today I Learned?
Okay, let's do it. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Shauna, think of all the relationships you have in your life. From parents, siblings, your friends, kids, coworkers, even neighbors. There's a lot of human interaction, which we know doesn't always go perfectly.
Oh, you know I don't have a perfect relationship with my next door neighbor, and I can't change her, but I can work on my own reactions to her and how she treats my family.
Absolutely. Strengthening your own coping skills and setting healthy boundaries in any relationship are important, and therapy can be a great place to work on these types of things.
Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. Not only that, therapy can help you handle stress, deal with burnout, and empower you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma, although of course it is helpful in those situations too.
I've noticed that doing weekly therapy helps me handle the things that cause overwhelm in my life, like constantly balancing kids, work, and self-care.
I love that therapy helps me have insights about myself that I might not have otherwise. It's always great to get an objective take on what I'm going through.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Become your own soulmate, whether you're looking for one or not. Visit BetterHelp.com/BFP today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BFP. Hey, listeners. This episode is proudly brought to you by LolaVie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. You know, hair so iconic, it needs no introduction.
Okay, imagine this. Jen got tired of the same old struggle we all face, choosing between hair products that work and ones that are actually good for us. With LolaVie, that dilemma is history.
We all put our hair through the ringer. Coloring, heat styling, stress, the list goes on. Over time, it takes a toll. That's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of the damage, but also shield your locks from future harm.
Enter LolaVie's best sellers, the cult classic Glossing Detangler and Perfecting Leave-In Conditioner. These aren't just styling products, they're your hair's new best friends.
And here's a treat for you listeners. For a limited time, you get an exclusive 15% off your entire order at LolaVie.com. Just use code BFP at checkout. I have been using the Glossing Detangler and Leave-In Conditioner, and I love them. I love how soft and healthy my hair feels after using them.
I love their restorative shampoo and conditioner plus intensive repair treatment. They smell so good, make my shower feel like a spa, and never leave my hair looking or feeling dry.
LolaVie's products are naturally derived in plant-based goodness. No silicone, sulfates, parabens, or gluten, and of course, cruelty-free and vegan.
Unlock Jennifer Aniston-approved hair at LolaVie.com. As our loyal listeners, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your entire order when you use code BFP at checkout.
That's 15% off your order at LolaVie.com with promo code BFP. Please note, you can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined.
After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you.
Okay, we are back, and Shauna has one more Today I Learned for us. Shauna, hit us with it.
Okay. Today I learned that for centuries, royal women gave birth in front of huge crowds.
What?
Of people. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I mean, as if it's not bad enough for those poor women back in the day. No freaking epidurals. Like, had to have those sons. There's so much pressure, right? And then, like,
oh my God. Yeah, when her, you wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. As soon as, like, the labor starts, I don't know. I guess someone rings a bell and, like, all the townspeople come
oh
and, like,
God.
People crowd into the hallways and stuff. I guess Marie Antoinette, when she was pregnant, she went into labor. There was, like, so much commotion that she basically, like, passed out. And she was out for like 12 hours. It was like so stuffy and hot in there. Like they had to rush to open the windows. And she had to be like on bed rest for a really long time because it was just all too much. And she had a daughter, you know, which was probably a bummer.
How dare she? We're talking like Western European royalty. France
yes.
and England,
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So I found this information on history.com. And of course, my question is like, okay, well, why? Aside from just the spectacle, you know? And so apparently it was to assure that a living baby was not substituted for a dead child.
Oh.
And that a royal baby girl was not switched for a desired boy.
So it's all like trust and verification purposes.
That's what it seems like, yeah. Although there is a bit of like a carnival-like atmosphere. There is like that celebration we want to view and witness it all. But I guess deep down it's really to be like, did she give birth to a girl or
no
not?
No wonder Queen Elizabeth never wanted to have kids.
Yeah.
Get married. She was like, fuck this, man.
Uh-huh.
I'm the fucking queen. I'm not going to have some people gather around and watch me pass out as I'm pushing a baby out.
Good
Lord.
My God. Could you imagine? It's like nowadays we're like, ugh, I don't know if I want my mother-in-law in the delivery room. Back then it's like, no choice. You, her and the whole entire village are going to bear witness.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it sounds terrible. I mean, everything about giving birth back in that day just sounds miserable.
I feel like everything about giving birth before, like, I want to say like 1975,
mm-hmm.
you know, because then there was that whole twilight sleep thing in the 60s.
Oh.
That's what, have you watched The Crown?
You know, I started, I haven't finished.
Well, there is a scene, like there's an episode about Queen Elizabeth II having one of her kids, I don't remember who, and she went into the twilight sleep. They like just knock her out and then she wakes up and there's a baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, wow. So you can, like, your body can labor even though you're in a twilight state?
I don't know so much about the twilight sleep. I've read about it. I think what it is it's like an amnesiac kind of. Mm-hmm. So you forget everything that happened. Yeah. I'm not 100% sure if you're passed. I think some people were passed out and they, like, used a lot of forceps. It was awful. Like,
yeah, that does sound awful.
And yeah, obviously that's why the natural birth movement, mm-hmm. like, was so important in, like, the 70s. You can understand,
yeah,
why all these people were really pushing for home birth and natural birth after, you know, this decades of being put to sleep for birth. But
wow.
Yeah,
that adds a lot more context to that argument,
mm-hmm.
for sure.
But yeah, it's so interesting to me too, because, like, you'd think that queens would be regarded in some kind of, like, they need to be pristine and pure, and you could never, like, see something so low as childbirth. But I guess, God forbid, they swap a baby.
Yes. Oh, no. Because really what they're there for is to produce male children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the more important thing than the queen status, don't you think?
Yeah, you're right. It's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and, like, how much pressure it would have been to not know if you were having a boy, and then, like, if you had a girl, like, thinking you're going to get, like, beheaded.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, my God. It's too much.
I wonder what, like, Henry VIII's wives would think about gender reveal parties.
that's a good question. Maybe we should, like, write that story.
We should summon Anne Boleyn. That was Anne Boleyn, right?
Anne Boleyn. Yes, I believe
one of them. I mean, there's a lot of them. There's Anne Boleyn. There was Catherine of Aragon. Oh, goodness. Oh, there's the one that has the same name as the actress. Oh, what's her name?
Cate Blanchett.
No. Okay. I'm Googling this because it's going to drive me crazy.
I don't know. My knowledge of royalty is slim at best.
Okay. Wives of Henry VIII. Catherine Parr. Okay. This is in backwards order. Here we go. Catherine of Aragon was first. I knew that. Anne Boleyn. Right. Jane Seymour. That's the one.
Jane Seymour. Yeah.
And then Anne of Cleves, Catherine Howard, and Catherine Parr. He was really into Catherines.
Mm. Well, everyone named their kid Catherine back then, and Elizabeth.
Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Anne of Cleves was the queen consort from January to July 1540.
What? That's it?
Oh, man.
Oh, King Henry. What was that show about him with Jonathan Rhys Meyers? That's where I get all of my royal knowledge, is from television series.
I don't know. I never watched any of those, like, Middle Ages to Renaissance. There was, like, a big boom of those for a while.
Yeah.
They were, like, the Medicis, too. Didn't they have a show?
Oh, the Tudors. The Tudors is the one with Jonathan Rhys Meyers. And I'm not going to lie. It's not that I have a passion for this topic. I just have a massive crush on that man. I think he's extremely gorgeous, and he sucked me in with his acting. So
he's good looking.
He is.
I'm not going to lie about that.
Anyway, so that's today I learned. So should we move on to our BFPs and BFNs?
Yes, let's do it. Okay, so every week we close with our big fat positives or big fat negatives of the week. Shauna, do you have a BFP or a BFN for us?
I have a BFP.
Yay.
Yay. My BFP is Hello Magazine.
Okay.
And it's a branch of Highlights. Do you remember Highlights from when we were kids?
Yes, I loved Highlights in the doctor's office.
I know, I was going to say, always in the doctor's and dentist's office. Love it, like the search for the pictures and blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've branched out since then, and they have a toddler magazine called High Five, which mm-hmm. my mom bought a prescription, oh lordy, bought a subscription for Elle when she was like two and a half. And that's really cute. You know, it's a more simplified version of Highlights. Mm-hmm. And then when Cece was about 6 months old, my mom got her a subscription to their other branch of magazine, which is for babies, and it's called Hello.
And oh, I've never heard of this.
So cute. It's a small magazine. It's smaller than the other ones. It's like maybe the size of like, I don't know, little Reader's Digest, you know, magazine, but it's really thin. It maybe has like 8 pages, maybe 10. And the paper is like thick and kind of has a coating on it. So it's not anything they can tear or chew through. It's
okay.
It's dirty.
That was going to be my first question.
Yes. No. Yeah. Totally sturdy. Lots of tearing. Okay. Lots of tearing. No. And at first, of course, Cece like didn't even know what was going on when I showed her those. But now she's getting older and she's like really likes them. And they just live on the bookshelf now because they are kind of, you know, sturdy and stuff. And so we keep them on the bookshelf. And she like has parts of them that she loves and remembers. Like there's this one that has a little rhyme in it about twins. It's like 1 + 1 is always 2, like that or whatever. And she just loves it. Like she'll just go and run and open it up to that page and like make me sing that song.
Aww.
And it's just really cute. Like there's a little find the hidden picture. And it's like you find 3 things, like find the nest. And it's just basically a nest in a tree. It's not hidden or anything.
Yeah.
And little rhymes. And also in like smaller text, there's information for parents about like baby development and stuff like that. That kind of goes along with the stories and songs.
That's so cool.
Yeah. We love it. So
what age do you think this is like appropriate up to?
I'd say that she'll probably be ready to move to the High Five magazine around 2.5, maybe.
Okay.
Is when Elle really started to get more into the High Five. Yeah, maybe, yeah, 2.5. 2.5.
So there's still time for us. Mm-hmm. I was just asking for me, really.
Oh, yeah.
Selfish. Yeah. Selfish question.
And it's a fun thing to get in the mail, you know, it's like it's addressed to her, you know, it's like special mail for Cece, and it's like, oh my god, that's adorable. Ugh, I love it.
That's really cute. I'm gonna check it out.
Yeah, check it out. Okay, what about you? You have a BFP or BFN?
I also have a BFP.
Ooh, ooh.
So mine is an Instagram account called Feeding Littles. Are you familiar with Feeding Littles? Yeah. I mean, they have 780,000 followers. So a lot of people have heard of Feeding Littles. But I love them because they just give really realistic and helpful tips on how to feed your babies and toddlers. Mm-hmm. And it's really refreshing because there's like no talk about weight or value of food, like if a food is like good or bad, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's got a really great philosophy, you know, how some days your kid eats a lot, some days your kid doesn't eat a lot, some days they only eat fish sticks, some day, you know, like whatever it is. And it's just a really, really like information-packed Instagram feed that I've always, like every time I've seen a new post, I'm just like super into it and get a lot of good tips, and it's very reassuring. So
Do they give tips for specific foods and snacks, like recipes, or what do you mean specifically?
They'll give you tips on like ways to serve food, like they'll give you different ways to eat the same food. Like, so here's one that is how to serve avocado to babies. You know, you can leave a little bit of skin on so they have something to hold on to. You can use a crinkle cutter. You can add a coating. You can make avocado toast. So they like give you all these different ways. Mm-hmm. There's also sort of philosophical things. So here's one about keeping language positive when talking about your child's eating. So it's like they'll say there's a column that's instead of this, consider this. So instead of he's so picky, he only eats a few foods, consider saying, we're learning about new foods together.
Ooh, I love that. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Or like, don't bother giving it to her. She'll never eat that. Instead say, let's put a little on her plate and she could eat it if she wants to try some. Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like that, which we talked about this as my check-in this week. Like, I'm really trying to be dedicated to trying to not put judgment or, you know, value judgments onto food. So, but then there's also just like funny stuff, you know, she's posted stuff about what her quarantine meals for her kids have been like and stuff like that. So it's been really fun to follow. And I do think that they also have like meal plans. If you really want extra guidance, you can like go buy a PDF with like meal plans on their website. So Yeah, that's Feeding cool. Littles.
I am definitely going to follow them because I just, like, yesterday, I was like, I am out of ideas for snacks for these kids. Yeah. So many snacks. It's like, what? And Cece is not eating dairy right now, so I can't hand her some string cheese. It's like, what do I feed these kids? So maybe I can get some inspiration from that account.
Oh, yeah, for sure. She has lots of stuff on it. It's actually two women, Megan and Judy, and they have a ton of great, like, ideas and suggestions, and yeah, it's great.
Cool.
So it's at Feeding Littles, all one word, Feeding Littles. So okay. You should be able to find them on social media.
Cool. And if our listeners want to find us on social media to drop us a line or join our community group, Laura, where can they find us?
We are on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at BFP Podcast. We also have a Facebook community group. Just search Big Fat Positive Community. Request to join. It's a closed group, but I will add you, and you can join in on all the amazing private conversations we're having in there. You could also send us an email or voice memo to contact@BigFatPositivePodcast.com or visit our website, BigFatPositivePodcast.com.
If you love our show, please rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts and spread the word. Let your friends know about our show. Big Fat Positive is produced by Laura Bierick, Shauna Maiko, and Steve Yeager. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye.